Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. At age 26, today's guest became a producer on the long-running CBS drama Dr. Quinn, Medicine Woman. On this pre-Thanksgiving week, he's become a prolific supplier of made-for-TV movies, more than 40 a year and 12 this holiday stretch. Tim Johnson is our guest, and he joins me next. Also ahead, a big Thanksgiving push for Andor, TLC favorites keep going, our new, that's right, new classic trivia winner, and where's the love for Apple TV, the device. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, simulcasting live from New York on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker and TuneIn Radio, and presented on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network, Spotify, iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, and other leading podcast destinations. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. 45 degrees, the top of the hour on this pre-Thanksgiving week Monday, and we welcome you to the program all about TV's current and future. Great to have you with us. We have a wonderful guest in store for you over this next hour, and we invite you to be part of the program. It's so simple. Pick up the phone and give us a call. The number you use, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number is good anyway. You're catching us across the country or around the globe. You're on Blog Talk Radio, Speaker or TuneIn Radio. You've got our chat room business as well, so go ahead and use it. It's SimonApple04 by name, and you'll find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. While the promo is on the air, as always, you can connect others and have them connect to you through Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon, your Blog Talk Radio, Speaker or TuneIn screen, follow the instructions, other people be live with you. Tim Johnson, head of Johnson Production Group, will join us live after these news notes. For all the people not yet catching Andor, don't despair. ABC and other Walt Disney-owned TV services will offer an opportunity next week. When Disney Plus wraps season one of its latest Star Wars adventure series, November 23rd, ABC will play the first two episodes in prime time that night as a 90-minute special. FX will do likewise Thanksgiving night, followed by Freeform next Friday night. Hulu will offer those episodes from November 23rd through December 7th. The episodes are Casa and That Would Be Me. Season 2 of Andor, starring Diego Luna in the title role, is expected to land on Disney Plus in 2024. Fans of several popular TLC series received a free Thanksgiving gift this morning due to the commitments in 2023. The beneficiaries of that decision include Say Yes to the Dress, I Am Jazz, My 600-Pound Life, and Extreme Sisters. 8 series in all will start new TLC episodes the first 3 months of 2023. Now, before we meet our guests and quickies, Behind the Music will bring back former MTV and VH1 series, that's, we should say, Paramount Plus will bring back Behind the Music for new episodes November 29th. Subjects include Boy George, Remy Ma, and Jennifer Lopez. Another Paramount Plus tidbit, Yellowstone prequel series 1923 will begin December 18th. Helen Mirren and Harrison Ford co-star. Prime Video is going all in on sports talk today. The Amazon service will program 12 hours of content weekdays starting at 8 a.m. Eastern Time. Hosts include Carrie Champion and Etienne Levine. And Money Court, featuring Shark Tank shark Kevin O'Leary and Skinny Girl founder Bethany Frankel, you remember him as one of the Real Housewives, comes to CNBC November 30th. And that is news notes for today. And now joining me live, I believe, from Los Angeles, the head of Johnson Production Group, our guest, Tim Johnson. Tim, welcome aboard.
Thank you. Good to be here.
And great to have you with us. Tim, where are you calling us from today?
Calling from Colorado right now, but tomorrow it would be L.A., so I'm kind of hopscotching around these days.
Okay. Well, Rocky Mountain High, great place to be. So what got you into television, first with Dr. Quinn and then your current status as a made-for-movie mogul?
Well, first of all, I laugh at the mogul reference. I'm just a TV movie guy, but you know, I was one of those guys that kind of just fell in love with, you know, film and the film process as a young kid. And it wasn't until probably after college that I actually, you know, looked back and realized that I actually had a choice. I didn't know I had a choice to, you know, pursue another career. I was one of those guys, like, I had to do it more than I, you know, wanted to eat. So I think I was blessed that way to know exactly what I wanted to do. But, you know, in hindsight, there were probably more options.
Mm-hmm. And why made-for-TV movies? What excites you about doing so many of them a year?
You know, first of all, I enjoy the process of them. I think that they're, you know, you have a lot more, you know, creative involvement to make something from the concept to completion in a short amount of time. And it's also much more entrepreneurial. I would say that, you know, I'm probably, you know, 70% filmmaker and 30% entrepreneur. And, you know, as a TV movie, you know, production house, you can be much more entrepreneurial because you're not constrained by the studios and, you know, all of their departments and requirements. So you can move fast. You can be creative. And you can be entrepreneurial and pretty much chart your own destiny. That's one of the nice things about it, is that you're not beholden to, you know, any one studio or any one network. You really can, you know, spread your wings. There's just a lot more buyers.
Yeah. I mean, after all, you now have, you have Netflix, you have Hulu, you have Prime Video, you have Freevee now, which is getting into the made-for-TV movie business. With their first holiday movie coming out, I believe it's next week or next weekend. You've got Lifetime. You've got Fox Nation now doing movies, Food Network, HGTV, Discovery Plus, it's HBO Max. It's all over the map, whether it's a regular broadcast or cable service or a mega content service. They're all doing it.
They are. I mean, if you have a platform, whether it's linear or, you know, SVOD or AVOD, you know, I mean, they're going to be making TV movies. The reason is because they can run so easily. I mean, you know, they can be done relatively inexpensively. They're in demand. The viewers like them. And you can program them anywhere. I mean, you don't have it like a one-hour series. You know, you have to commit to, you know, 13 weeks at a certain time slot. TV movies, you can program in the afternoon. You can program in prime time. You can program in the middle of the night. And, you know, you can shuffle your schedule. They're a great programming tool. They really are.
Your organization, Johnson Production Group, makes over 40 of these films a year. How do you determine what films you do, what genres you you specialize in? What excites you about doing a specific movie?
Well, I think the part about what excites me about a specific movie is to, you know, I am a TV avid TV movie watcher, so. You know, I think just by kind of being an armchair programmer, you know, as a producer, you kind of look at what's out there and you see like, oh, wow, you know, if we did it this way, this could really stand out and might, you know, might really make a neat TV movie. Like, and for instance, you know, the Christmas movie landscape is incredibly, you know, popular, but it's also, you know, I mean, it's just, everybody's making Christmas movies and, you know, half of them look the same and half of them, you know, could have been made 5 years ago. And so how do you differentiate yourself, you know, from that? And, you know, there's two ways of doing it. One is the concept, because they are going to all look, you know, you have to have a Christmas decoration. One is the concept and the other one is cast. And so, you know, a concept came in, you know, about 6 months ago about that was sent to me by an outside, you know, writer, and, you know, immediately this guy, you know, sends this concept in about this guy that's colorblind. And what happens is that there's these new glasses which can help people that are colorblind see light. And this concept was, you know, that this guy at Christmas gets one of these pair of glasses by this woman who, of course, has got a thing for him. And, you know, he gets to see all the lights and she walks around town and shows him what, you know, what is red and all the different Christmas colors and the Christmas lights. And that immediately hit me. I'm like, I haven't seen that on TV. And that's a neat, you know, entrance into a Christmas movie. So that's really what excites me, is seeing something that's really different that can still fit the mold. You know, we're not trying to change the formula. We're trying to make the formula more unique and different with new angles to it.
We're speaking with Tim Johnson. He is the head of one of the biggest suppliers of made-for-TV movies around, Johnson Production Group. And by the way, they have got a movie that's coming out on Thanksgiving Day we're going to talk about shortly, which Netflix is very high on, called The Noel Diary. It's got some very good actors in it. And it also is a very good director of rom-coms, Charles Shire. If you know the man, you know his track record of some of the movies he's done over the years. And it's also based on a best-selling New York Times novel. So we will talk to Tim about that. We'll also talk about another film, which I had a sneak preview of earlier today, called The 12 Days of Christmas Eve. It will premiere Thanksgiving weekend on Lifetime, and it's got, I think, a very special performance from Kelsey Grammer. We'll talk about why it's special in a little bit. Tim joins us live from Colorado this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. Found out I've been with you live from New York. It's 45 degrees. It's not the 70s anymore. We're back to the normal temperatures this time of year, 40s and 50s. And if you have a question or comment for Tim, make a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Friday on Tomorrow Be Televised, Crackle, one of the most popular series, Going From Broke, executives by Ashton Kutcher, is coming back for a new season shortly. We will have the executive producer, Michael Winner, and one of the on-camera experts, Tanya Rapley. That's coming up Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific, here on Tomorrow Be Televised. And don't forget, 1 week from Monday, for the fourth year in a row, it's our annual Thanksgiving week triple header. Great live episodes, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, back to back to back next week. And coming your way on Monday, among our guests, we will have, from ABC's popular seasonal show, The Great Christmas Life Fight, going into season 10, the weekend after Thanksgiving, executive producer Brady Connell. Also, we hope on Monday to have some of the winners of the recent Catalyst TV Festival held in Duluth, Minnesota earlier this fall. So we're getting that together. We hope to have that also a week from Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, right here, kicking off our Thanksgiving week triple header 2022 on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Tim, this Netflix film, The Noel Diary, sounds like it is going to be a winner. It's got some great stars in it. It's got a great director in it who is very popular for comedies and rom-coms. Talk about how that came into play for you.
Well, you know, the Noel Diary, I mean, it's one of those projects that's a passion project for a lot of people. Charles Shire is just, the auteur on this thing and an amazing talent. And it was amazing to work with him. It's, Noel Diary is based on a book called of the same name, a New York Times bestseller. And we optioned the book, 4 years ago. And the book, it's a series of three books, actually. Noel was the first of the three series. And, Netflix came in and they said, we pitched it to Netflix and they said, this is really different kind of Christmas movie. And we're looking for something a little different than the standard rom-com Christmas movie because it's very dramatic. And they said, we'd like to do it. So we started hunting for a director and, just by luck, Charles's agent was calling saying, Charles is looking for something. And, I took him to lunch. And, we hit it off, and I really, these A directors, and he is an A feature director, as you can kind of get the sense that this is going to be really a special movie because these guys, Charles, became obsessed with this movie, every little detail, and he was committed. And I knew, when I met him, I said, if we go this direction, this is not going to be in and out. This is going to be, we're making a real movie here. And it turned out exactly that way. What you kind of go after is usually what you get. And we got ourselves a feature film.
And in this movie, you've got some really amazing actors. Someone whose work I have loved for years, Bonnie Bedelia. Remember her from Heart Like a Wheel. She was also great in a wonderful ABC series called The New Land based on the John Terwilliger movie, which should have run longer than it did. ABC did not believe in the show. It was on Saturday nights. It was a very well done. She was excellent. She won any nomination for it. Treat Williams is in the film. You, of course, know his work from Everwood and other things, Prince of the City. So you've got some really A-list talent on both sides of the camera.
Yeah, no, Bonnie gave an amazing performance, and then don't forget about, Justin Hartley and Barrett Doss. I mean, the two of them are just magnetic in this movie. I hate to go out there and, pump our own movies, but, this is a special movie, and I think it's going to, I think it's going to perform for Netflix, and, they were amazing at supporting the whole process, and we were just incredibly grateful for everybody involved. And we had other, obviously, you know, great producers involved. It wasn't just me, you know, a project of this size, you know, you've got, you know, Margaret Huddleston, Stephanie Slack, you know, Andrew Gennard and Oliver DeCagney. I mean, there's just a whole bunch of people that, you know, I'm reluctant to, you know, be the one talking about this movie without mentioning.
You have a lot of clients that you're making movies for with the 40 movies a year. You've got Netflix, you have A&E Networks, you have Hallmark, you have Up, you've got Amazon, you've got other folks too. What's it like to work with all of these different services as opposed to being locked into, I'm just going to do movies for Lifetime, or I'm just going to do made for movies for Hallmark Channel and Movies and Mysteries, or I'm going to just some for Up?
You know, every platform has its own culture that you kind of got to size up, and we have our own culture. And it's really about finding, you know, the two cultures that can kind of, you know, match with one another to really to make it an enjoyable experience. And so far, you know, we've been very fortunate because, you know, we've been able to wrap ourselves around, you know, these companies and deliver. But I would say by and large, we perform better as, you know, suppliers that take it from soup to nuts and deliver rather than a production service. If a company comes to us with a project and asks us to make it, we're probably not the company for that. We're the company that will, you know, creatively, you know, inspire and direct the development process and take it all the way to delivery.
Mm-hmm. Now, also on Thanksgiving weekend, in addition to Netflix's movie, you've got a film coming up for Lifetime with Kelsey Grammer called The 12 Days of Christmas Eve. I saw the trailer for it literally today. It's a really fanciful movie, and it's got a lot. It's got a serious theme, but it does it in a very fun way, and Kelsey gets the chance to spend some acting time on camera with her daughter Spencer, or his daughter.
Yeah,
Spencer.
That was something that, you know, Kelsey and his team developed directly with, you know, Tanya Lopez and the team at Lifetime, and they brought that project to us, and we were able to, you know, jump into it and deliver that thing, and that movie turned out really good, and everybody on that, you know, on the creative side and the crew did an amazing job. It's really proud of that one. I mean, I think Thanksgiving night and weekend is going to be a big weekend for a lot of our titles. And it's typically the weekend that really launches Christmas as far as the book. That's when the ratings really pop up. So it'll be an interesting weekend.
Of the non-holiday films that you've done this year, what are you most proud of? What film or two are you most proud of?
Of the non-holiday. Interesting. You know, there's just so many of them. You mean the ones that have been, you know, released, or the ones that we're shooting now? I mean,
the ones that have been released, that have already played.
Yeah, that have already played. You know, I always like, you know, some of those, you know, some of the, you know, Noel Next Door on the Christmas front. And on the non-Christmas front, it's pretty hard, you know, on the non-Christmas front, Stalked by My Prince on the thriller side, and, you know, Road Trip Romance on the rom-com side, I would say. And that, you know, the thriller side was on Lifetime, and Road Trip Romance was on, you know, Hallmark.
In a moment, we're going to get Tim Johnson's thoughts about the ongoing Emmy controversy surrounding made-for-TV movies. They're still not getting love from the TV Academy, and we want to get Tim's thoughts about that and what his company is going to be doing for 2023 and beyond. Tim Johnson is our guest this half hour, the head of Johnson Production Group here on Tomorrow Be Televised. He joins us live from Colorado this half hour. Simon Abbott with you from the other side of these United States, namely Nueva York. The question of Colorado, I'm meeting this with Tim. Just call it in, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Coming up our next half hour, at long last, we have a brand-new classic trivia winner. You'll find out who it is and the answer to our question that we started posing a week ago today. Also, Apple TV, the device, is brand-new. A new version came out. A big upgrade came out at the start of the month. So why isn't getting any promotional love? I'll have some thoughts about that. And if we have time, we'll also talk about TCM's Reframed, Movies That Shape the Culture. They ran a movie that I thought should not have run, that did not shape the culture yesterday. And if we have a chance, last night, if we have a chance, we'll talk about that and why. And I'd love to get your thoughts about it, too. So stick around for that in our next half hour. Kim, many years ago, made-for-TV movies were considered like the top of the Emmy list to honor. You had the made-for-TV movie category, but you also had individual categories for acting, writing, and directing for films like Brian's Song, The Execution of Private Slovak, That Certain Summer, Promise, My Name is Bill W., et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But in recent years, those categories are gone. If you want to enter a made-for-TV movie category in acting, you got to do it with up against miniseries. And then the made-for-TV movie category itself for the last 2 years, including this year, is not on the primetime telecast. What's your thoughts about this?
I remember. I was starting out in the business when it was, you know, My Name is Bill W. and Tracy Thurman and all those other, you know, wonderful TV movies were made. You know, TV movies by and large, you know, they don't, you know, we make a couple a year that have issues oriented, but by and large, they're not, it's not the issue oriented. I don't want to say disease of the week, but they're just not, they're not even based on issues as much anymore. They're either thrillers, rom-coms, or, you know, Christmas. It's much more, you know, entertaining bubblegum. And, you know, you go for the ride, and it's a beautiful experience, but we're not necessarily, you know, trying to, you know, deliver a message along with it. So I think that has something to do with it. And, you know, I think that the lobbying groups for, you know, the Emmys and the Television Academy used to be the major networks, and the major, you know, the four broadcast networks aren't really involved in the TV movie business. So, you know, they were really kind of the steering committee for so many years, still are, for the Academy. So I just don't think it's a priority. So you're kind of, they're left with the HBOs and the big miniseries. But there should be, you know, I mean, there should be a category, you know, they should do the, you know, the miniseries and the TV movies, but maybe a category for, you know, holiday TV movies and a category, you know, for some of the thrillers and rom-coms. I think there should be.
Because the issue, Tim, is that if you cannot judge a made-for-TV movie performance or directing or writing for a film that runs 90 minutes to 2 hours up against a miniseries that can run 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, you know, 12 hours or more, it's not you can't judge. And so in these categories which combine made-for-TV movies and miniseries, the miniseries wins out. Isn't it time that perhaps the made-for-TV movie production community gets to the TV Academy and says, look, this doesn't work. We want our awards back. We want the movie category in the primetime Emmy show, no matter who runs it, and it's time to get our reputation back.
Well, I think that there's something to be said there, but, I mean, I think that, you know, there's a bigger picture at play, and that is, you know, the HBO miniseries. And, I mean, there's no way a TV movie that we make should be, you know, up against, you know, The Undoing and stuff like that, right? So the Undoing on HBO should be, you know, as a, you know, should be in the feature category, should be a part of the Motion Picture Academy. I mean, which kind of brings you into play, okay, where's the line drawing? I mean, these two academies really, with streaming, the advent of streaming and theatrical kind of been, you know, kind of readjusted its, you know, position in the marketplace. I mean, these two academies should merge because the lines are so gray. And then maybe there might be some clarity. But, you know, the HBO The Undoing, which is this incredible miniseries, you know, that's a feature, you know, film that happens to be 6 hours long, right, or 8 hours long. So
was able to get a film called The Survivor, which had a fantastic performance by Ben Foster. And while the film was up for an Emmy this year, Ben Foster's performance was not, again, because he was up against all the miniseries performances. What's interesting is that we're now seeing that the winner this year was Chip and Dale's Rescue Rangers, which was a combo animation live-action film that was on Disney Plus, I believe, as well as Disney Channel. You had Zoe's Extraordinary Playlist from Roku, which actually had two entries. And it's going to be very interesting to see what happens with Weird Al Yankovic, the Weird Al Yankovic movie with Daniel Radcliffe. A lot of people think that that could be up for some major Emmy Awards if it can get into those major categories.
Yeah, I mean, the amount of stuff that has been made, you know, that falls into the TV movie category, you know, I'm a huge fan of. I love it. It's fantastic. You know, I just think that, you know, the Academy of Motion Pictures and the Academy of Television, I don't think either of their, you know, either one of them are sustainable on their own, and I think they need to broaden their reach, and they should merge.
Mm-hmm. I'd love to hear what you folks out there think about that. You know, give us a call or use our chat room or email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com, and we'll get your thoughts about that if we get some thoughts on Friday's episode. So, Tim, what's in the hopper for 2023 from your place?
Well, we're starting a movie on January 1st on Hallmark with which is called Dog Lover's Guide to Dating. And so we're starting the year off strong. And then after that, we just started production on a movie called Glacier Park Romance, which is part of our National Park series of TV movies for Hallmark. And that airs on January 28th. So, you know, we are currently have 7 movies in production. So it's going to be a strong year that we're going into. And we're also starting.
Have you thought about doing biopics? Lifetime has done well the last couple of years with films like Mahalia, the Mahalia Jackson film, which was nominated for an Emmy in the movie category 2 years ago. The Clark Sisters film, which turned out to be a real sleeper hit. Any thought about maybe doing biopics or doing a social issue picture like a That Certain Summer or even a film like Brian's Song or Promise? That was a very, very moving human story.
Well, you know, we haven't been doing the typical dramatic biopic. You know, we're doing the Sherry Papini story right now. If you remember that story, the woman up in San Francisco that faked her own kidnapping, and we're doing that. That's kind of, I mean, we're doing the true crime biopics, but we're not. We as a company have not been focused on the bigger biopics, and Lifetime typically has been developing them themselves and producing them themselves or with Sony.
Is there, we'll use this as a final question, is there a particular project that you would like to, based on, let's say, a book you love or a story you've gotten, an idea you've been pitched, that you would like to make next year?
Well, the one that I'm most excited about right now is a film we're shooting down in the Maldives called Underwater Enchantment, which is starring Jocelyn Hutton and Jake Manley. And that will be on sometime in second quarter for Hallmark. And that is a project that we've been developing for the last, you know, 4 years. We wanted to shoot it before the pandemic. And we're shooting in the Maldives because they have an underwater hotel. And we're going to bring the audience to that. The one that I really want to do that we don't have greenlit yet is a thing called Match of the Penguins, which is basically, if you remember March of the Penguins, it's Hallmark's romance version of March of the Penguins. And it's about a, you know, scientist that's down there studying how penguins mate. And in the process of her studies in her papers, she, of course, falls in love with another scientist down in Antarctica. Now, the problem with that movie, the reason why we haven't made it, is it's a full 2.5-day trip just to get to Antarctica. You can't stay overnight where the penguins are, so you have to take a boat back, which is 4 hours each way. So it's a little bit of a tricky production, but we have been planning it for over 3 years, and I think we're going to get it made, hopefully, this year.
Hopefully, everything in Mother and Father Nature willing, you get it done. Like you say, in the world of natural filmmaking, Mother Nature and Father Nature are the directors. You got to work on their timetable, not yours. Hopefully it'll finally happen. All good. Everything willing will happen. If you want to know more about Tim Johnson's company, Johnson Production Group, here's where you go online, www.johnsonproductiongroup.com. That's www.johnsonproductiongroup.com. Again, The Noel Diary, with a cast that includes Justin Hartley, Bonnie Bedelia, Barrett Dose, and Treat Williams. It premieres next Thursday, Thanksgiving Day, on Netflix. For more details about that, go to Netflix.com, directed by the great Charles Shire. And on November 26th on Lifetime, The 12 Days of Christmas Eve, starring Kelsey Grammer and his daughter, Spencer Grammer. That, again, is on Lifetime. Check that out as MyLifetime.tv. That's Lifetime's website. Tim Johnson, thanks again for joining us. A pleasure to have you on at last. Congratulate on what your production company has done, and hopefully many, many more great films on all different networks for people to hear and see.
Thanks for having me. You guys have a great day. Thank you.
All right, will do, Tim. All the greatest. Take care. Have a great week.
Thank you. You too. Thank you.
Tim Johnson of Johnson Production Group joining us live from Colorado. When we come back, our new classic trivia winner with that big correct answer. Where's the love for Apple TV, the new device? And boy, it's a big one. Plus, if we have time, the movie that maybe Turner Classic Movies should not have shown yesterday, last night, as part of its Reframe series, an otherwise excellent, excellent set of movies. We'll get to that after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. This is www.blogtalkradio.com, speaker.com, and tune.com, together reaching over 75 million listeners around the world every month and growing. If you are a Star Trek fan, tonight is a big deal on BTR, the 500th episode of Trek Talking. Check it out today, 7:30 p.m. Eastern, 4th in Pacific, the 500th episode of Trek Talking. For all you Star Trek fans out there, that's today, right here on Blog Talk Radio. And remember, best BTR 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to the second half of Tomorrow Be Televised on this Monday afternoon, pre-Thanksgiving week 2022. Simon Applebaum with you live from Nueva York, 45 degrees and sunny. Leaves coming down here in the Big Apple at the bottom of the hour. We have our classic trivia question coming up with our brand new winner, and we have a commentary or two as well. And we'd love to hear from you. So give us a call, 646-652-2906, or check out our chat room, Simon Apple 04 by name. All righty, for the first time in several months, we have a winner for our classic trivia question of the week. And our winner is Jeanette Houghton. I hope I have the last name pronunciation right. She's from New York, New York. She runs her own media and marketing firm, and she got the question correctly. And here was that question we posed a week ago and then earlier. And the question was, and it's a real classic of classic trivia, who was Joe Friday's, that's Jack Webb's, original partner on the original television, the 1950s TV version of Dragnet? Who was Joe Friday's first partner on the original 1950s Dragnet television series? The answer, and we wanted either the actor's name or the character's name. The actor was Barton Yarbrough, who actually was part of the Dragnet radio series that featured Jack Webb as Joe Friday. And the character's name was Sergeant Ben Romero. Now, you may wonder, well, why didn't we know about this? For many of the people who have caught the reruns on YouTube and other places. Well, because Yarbrough died after completing the second film episode back in 1951. So what happened was, between his performance and Ben Alexander, who became Joe Friday's partner on most of the 1950s episodes, there was a second partner, and that was played by Barney Phillips. Now, if you know the actor, you know that he was one of the key people in a classic Twilight Zone episode from the early 1960s called Will the Real Martians Stand Up, written by Rod Serling. It's one of his best, and he also is involved in one of the great twist endings of that TV series all time. So once again, the classic trivia answer was Barton Yarbrough. And as Sergeant Ned Romero, that was Joe Friday's on the original Dragnet 1950s television series that started back in 1951. And his role only lasted two episodes before he passed away. I believe it was from a heart attack. So Jeanette Houghton from New York, New York. We got three prizes coming your way. We have two wonderful books for you. Randy Dawn's Tune In Tomorrow. We've got Flirting with Fame, the great Hollywood know-all book by Dan Harary, the longtime PR executive. Both Randy and Dan were on our show earlier this year. And from AMC Networks, we have their brand-new notepad and notepad case. And they'll all be coming your way in the mail over the next few days. So, Jeanette, congratulations. Thanks for becoming our new Classic Trivia winner. We will have a new Classic Trivia question for you on Monday when we kick off our Thanksgiving week episode triple header. And when we give you the question on Monday, if you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. That's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Remember, when you email the answer, enclose your name and where you're emailing from, just like Jeanette did. And if you first get the correct answer, you win. If we don't get a winner by the end of next Monday, we will pose the question Tuesday in the morning on both Facebook and Twitter. Facebook at Simon Applebaum and Twitter at UBC Simon TWBC. That's Twitter at Simon Applebaum, Facebook at Simon Applebaum, excuse me, and Twitter at UBC Simon TWBT. Remember, in order to win, just like Jeanette Hoken in New York did, you got to play in, so do so. And all the very best. And once again, congratulations, Jeanette, for being our latest Classic Trivia segment winner. And now, a comment. Last night, I was watching Sunday Night Football, both on NBC in English and Universo in Spanish. And during a commercial break on Universo, there was an ad in Spanish from Apple. The commercial was for their latest iPhone, iPhone 14, which everybody has heard about. It's been blared all over the place. It's all over the internet with all the banner ads, all the TV ads, all the radio ads, all the tech coverage and the technology press, all the websites like Engadget and CNetNews.com and so on and so forth. Here's what you haven't heard about. You haven't heard, except listening to our show at the start of the month, that there is a brand new Apple TV, the device, Apple TV 4K, next generation, brand new. It was launched on November 4th for $129, and it is the best Apple TV, the device, yet, in terms of its functionality, its features, and especially its interactive capability. Just check out what you get. Yes, you get Apple TV Plus, which is on a real roll with shows like, you know, Severance, Mystic Quest, Pachinko, the Oscar-winning film Coda, of course, the Emmy winner in comedy Ted Lasso, with a lot of other things happening. And, of course, they're also doing Major League Soccer, Friday Night Baseball, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And they've got a big lineup of new original shows for 2023. And let's not forget also the great lineup of family shows that they're running, like Fraggle Rock, which, by the way, is having a holiday special coming up soon, the Snoopy Show, other Peanut specials, and other good stuff too. But that's not all. That's just the start. What else do you get? You get Apple Music. You get a catalog of over 100 million songs. You get Apple Arcade, which features now lots of titles that you can play on your television set. You get Apple Fitness Plus. It's interactive fitness and wellness with more than 3,000 studio-style workouts, meditations, and you can watch them at any time and enjoy them. You don't even need an Apple Watch to check it out. And how about trying this? It's also a photo library using iCloud, so you can watch photos together on your television set. And Apple TV is now becoming this device a smart home hub where you can get your home cameras on the television set displayed any time. You can turn on your lights. You can display multiple cameras for a more complete view of what's happening in your house. You can check your home security. You can also, control your air conditioning, control other aspects of your energy. And you also get access to Matter, which is a new smart home connectivity standard that will allow a wide variety of accessories to be part of your Apple TV system. So you've got all these interactive features. You have all these services that Apple has been offering for a while. Now they're available on the television set. And guess what? Here we are, almost 4 weeks into its availability at Apple stores, at other places, and it's not being advertised, and it's not being promoted. Where are the television spots? Where are the radio spots? Where's the banner headlines or banner ads on the internet? Where is a press conference that specifically discusses Apple III. Why isn't Tim Cook, for example, doing a virtual press conference with reporters about this new Apple TV souped-up version with all these next-generation services in 4K, high definition? Why? Don't you think he deserves it? And after all, it's priced at like $130. So it is, for many people, affordable, given all the features you're getting. And that, by the way, doesn't include other apps that you can get on that device. Where's the promotion? Where is the impetus? Where is the push to make this a holiday consumer attraction? It's not there. It's all going to the iPhone 14. It's all going to the new Mac computers. It's not going where it should go, to this new product. To me, that's shameful. And again, this is another example of the publicity people at Apple, and we're talking about the management in publicity, the management in marketing, the management in promotion, that's asleep at the wheel. The only thing I have seen about, in terms of promoting this new device, this new souped-up version of Apple TV, is the press release. The press release that was issued back on October 18th from Cupertino. What gives, Apple? Why not give this device some love and give it a shot at becoming a great holiday attraction? We've had this issue before with Apple TV Plus, the service, where for some reason, despite the fact that Apple TV Plus has a terrific group of publicists, terrific group. I know some of them. They're marvelous. I've worked with some of them before in other places. And yet, it is one of the toughest places to get guests for this program when it comes to their major shows. We usually have to go through an outside agency to get guests from Apple TV Plus programming. And again, this is not to blame on the folks who are on the ground trying to do their thing. It's the management of Apple. It's the management in public relations and promotion and marketing. They come across as being very laissez-faire and not giving a hoot. And I just wonder, like with Apple TV, why they are just not doing it. What are they not getting? If you want to give your product a shot to work with the public, you have to get out there and promote it. You have to get out there and use programs like this, not to mention other podcasts, not to mention advertising, to get your point across, to encourage people to buy the product, to give it a shot. Where are the Apple TV Plus ads on Sunday Night Football? Where are the Apple TV Plus ads on other services? Is Apple going to use now that Netflix is taking ads? How about using that to promote Apple TV Plus? And by the way, if Apple TV Plus decides to take advertising, which we are hearing, is that going to be used to promote Apple TV, the device? What is going on here? It is nuts. Come on, Apple. This is a great advancement for this product, which has been on the market now for over 5 years. And it's time it gets the push. You might just be surprised if you make the push. And don't be cheap about it. Don't be so lazy about it. Get out there and get in people's faces through television, through radio, through programs like this, through websites, through social media, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Stop being lazy. Get out there and show people you give a hoot about your product. And then let's see what happens. I think they might be surprised. And by the way, we stand by. If you want to use our show, if you want to have somebody talk about Apple TV, the device on our program, we'd love to have you. As a matter of fact, we will do that. Tomorrow morning, I'm going to email the person that was the contact on that press release back in last month to talk about it. So let's see what we can do. Come on, Apple. It's time to cut out the we don't talk about our products. You want to stand behind your product? Get out there. Talk about it. I think it will pay off in big, big dividends for you. And it's about time, too, for this product. Now a second comment. If you haven't heard, all this month, Turner Classic Movies is running a wonderful new series called Reframed. It's on Saturday and Sunday nights at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. Where it presents a movie doubleheader of films that, one way or another, have impacted our culture over the decades. We're talking films like Imitation of Life, the original movie, starring Claire Colbert and Louise Beavers, Blackboard Jungle with Glenn Ford, Guess Who's Coming to Dinner that was on last night with Sidney Poitier, Spencer Tracy and Katharine Hepburn, and I Was a Fugitive of Chain Gang, which was on last weekend. If you've never seen that movie, it's one of the great early films of the 1930s and one of the great performances by one of the very best actors in any medium, Paul Muni, one of the greats. Every time you see a movie of his, it's a different character, and he's so into the character, it's really amazing. And this is one of his very, very best, and this was a groundbreaker dealing with the whole subject of chain gangs. Up to this point, up to last night, the picks have been terrific. However, and this is my opinion, TCM pulled a boner last night by playing a movie that, frankly, is one of the worst movie musicals ever made, adapted from one of the worst Broadway musicals ever made by Rodgers and Hammerstein, two of the greats, Richard Rodgers, Os Downing, and talk about Flower Drum Song. Now, why this movie was picked was that this was one of the first movies that had a largely Asian-American cast. Now, I've seen this movie a lot of times, and frankly, this movie is a dud. It is abominable. Why? It's a mishmash, because the original Rodgers and Hammerstein musical also was a mishmash. If you know the story, it was a musical directed by Gene Kelly, choreography by Carol Haney. It starred Michio Yumeki, Pat Suzuki, wonderful 1950s singer, actress, and Larry Blyden was also in that movie, the original play as well. And it got mixed reviews, and it didn't run too long, just about a year, year and a half at best. In 1961, Universal made it into a movie, and frankly, it was worse than the musical. Why? It's a mishmash. It starts out okay. For those who don't know, it's based on a book by C.Y. Lee is the author, who is an Asian-American author. And the film is about, or actually starts out being, about a father and daughter. Yumeki plays the daughter, the Oscar winner from Sayonara, who come to San Francisco's Chinatown and is trying to engage in their new land and their new culture. The first 10 to 15 minutes are really enchanting, and especially when Michio Yumeki sings one of the best Rodgers and Hammerstein songs ever from any musical, 100 Million Miracles. I love that phrase, 100 Million Miracles are happening every day. I love that. And that movie, if the movie had stuck with that plot line, would have been marvelous. Unfortunately, the problem with this movie is it stacks up plot after plot after plot after plot after plot, where Michio Yumeki and that father are like pushed in the background on a number of different levels. Number one, you have a love triangle. The love triangle is among James Shigeta, who plays a college student, who is in love with a nightclub singer-dancer played by Nancy Kwan. Wonderful talent. Wonderful, fantastic talent. And the manager of the nightclub, played by Jack Su, you may know him from Yamada on Barney Miller and other things, who was, by the way, ultimately in the Broadway cast of Flower Drum Song, plays the manager, who is also in love with his popular singer-dancer. So you have that pushing into the plot. Then you have the family gets involved with the culture, Yumeki's family, the people she finds in San Francisco. Then you have this generation gap plot that comes in, older people versus younger people. Along the way, we have stereotypes that, frankly, were dated by the time the film came out. And then you have this love triangle go expanded, where you have another character played by the wonderfully sadly underused talent Reiko Sato, wonderful actress, singer, dancer, who plays Helen. She falls in love with the James Shigeta character. It goes nowhere, despite a wonderful ballad called Love Look Away, and she does a dance. And then, voila, she's out of the picture, and we don't see it for the rest of the movie. It's like plot lines get dangled up. And again, you know, the original plot line goes back into the shadows. It comes back later. I'm not going to tell you how. But by that time, you don't care about the movie. You don't. The film runs way too long. Now, on top of all that, there's also the situation that Universal Pictures, or the director Henry Koster, or the producers, want to turn Nancy Kwan into the Asian-American Anne Margaret. At that time, you remember that Anne Margaret became a superstar in part because of taking over Bye Bye Birdie. When that Broadway musical was adapted for film, the folks decided, let's make Anne Margaret the focus of the film. And there are a lot of people, by the way, who are in the original cast of Bye Bye Birdie who did not like that and felt that the film lost a lot because of the focus on Anne Margaret. It's not Anne Margaret's fault. It's the focus that really blew it. Well, the same thing happens with Nancy Kwan. She gets all these musical and dance numbers. Some of them are badly choreographed. So they don't use the max of her talent. And then it's sort of like, well, we got to, you know, keep throwing in numbers with Nancy Kwan. And again, it stops the show, literally. And it doesn't advance the plot. So you have all these numbers that I've thrown in. And again, it's like mishmash. The shame of it is it had a wonderful cast. The shame of it is that if they had stuck with the initial plot, and the same thing with the Broadway musical, it had a shot to make it because it would have been focused on that character, Mizoki Meki. If it was just about her and what she deals with her father, and maybe have her fall in love with somebody else. By the way, the ending doesn't jive. It's like out of nowhere. It's one of those, again, 2 minutes to go in the film, let's wrap it up. It like comes out of nowhere, and that's the problem, another problem with this film. Things come out of nowhere that just screw the film up. And by the way, I want to give credit to both Ben Mankiewicz and the great movie historian Donald Bogle for not overlooking the issues with Flower Drum Song last night, because they did bring up the issue of the characters that go nowhere. They did bring up the issue of the stereotypes. They did bring up the issue of, yeah, the film is too long, and so on and so forth. And it had mixed reviews, even though it was nominated for 5 or 6 Academy Awards, basically for the craft, like cinematography, music direction, sound, et cetera, et cetera. And the film, as it turned out, had a negative impact on the culture. For one thing, we didn't see a Asian-American ensemble of players until the Joy Luck Club. And when it came to Flower Drum Song, remember the revival on Broadway with Leah Salonga that was written by David Henry Hwang? That went nowhere. There are a lot of people who are not happy with Flower Drum Song, one way or the other, whether you adapt it, you revive it, you put in new dialogue, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It's an animal. It's a beast. The shame of it is, if they had stuck, in my feeling, if they had stuck on the Mizoki Meki character and her father and, you know, put them through the whole Chinatown, Asian-American, overall American experience, I think they would have had something, both the original Broadway musical and the film. But again, I want to give credit to Ben Mankiewicz and Donald Bogle for not overlooking the flaws in the film. Now, I don't think Turner Classic Movies should have run this movie. What should they have run? Sayonara, a better film dealing with the relationship between Asians and people in the United States. There's a double interracial romance situation which deals with racism. Or here's another one, The Crimson Kimono, wonderful film doesn't get enough play on Turner Classic Movies. That was the film that really got James Shigeta as one of the great leading men in all of film. And it also deals with not only dealing with crime, but it deals with racism in a number of different levels, and it also deals with interracial love and interracial affair. I think either one, Sayonara or The Crimson Kimono, would have been a better movie for Reframed. Nevertheless, I highly recommend Reframed. It is a terrific project. So far, so good in terms of the picks. The outlier is Flower Drum Song. Again, I would not have picked it. I would have picked Sayonara, The Crimson Kimono. I think they're better films. I also think that they deliver the point home, made the points that I think could have been made by Flower Drum Song. You can catch the next Reframe this Saturday and Sunday night. It's a doubleheader each night, 8 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time on Turner Classic Movies. Check your locals where TCM is available in the area on cable and satellite. For more details, go to tcm.com. They'll also have additional information, too, about Reframe. It is a project well worth catching. I want to thank my guests again, Tim Johnson from Johnson Production Group, being on the program. We'll be back on Friday, and joining us then will be from the popular Crackle series Going From Broke, executive producer Michael Winner, and on-camera expert Tanya Rapley. And don't forget, 1 week from today, we start our Thanksgiving episode triple header. Among our guests on our opening episode on Monday, the executive producer of ABC's The Great Christmas Life by going to season 10, the Monday after Thanksgiving, that's 2 weeks from today, executive producer Brady Connell. If you came in late on today's episode, want to catch up on episodes you missed, go to the homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. Check out our podcasts all week long. They're available on everywhere from Spotify, iHeartRadio, TuneIn.com, Speaker.com, et cetera, et cetera. And don't forget, we'd love to hear from you. What do you think about today's episode? What's your thoughts on where TV's at and where it's going? Email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. Find me on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter. So however you find me, I do respond to what you have to say within 24 hours, and we really appreciate what you have to say, because guess what? What you say matters now more than ever. The views expressed are those of the participants. They are not say those of Blog Talk Radio and other services programs. Andy Toe is BTR's general manager. Dave Sonnenberg is head of content. Website service provided by On Podium, the Internet's new podcast outpost. Guitarist Fakus is our web coordinator. For Tawby Televised, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for your listening. Have a great rest of your Monday and pre-Thanksgiving week. We're back on Friday. You know when, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, and you know where, Blog Talk Radio, SpeakerTune Radio, all of our podcast destinations, and our website, tomorrowbetelevised.onpodium.com. Whatever you're up to now and then, please make it safe and make it great. Thank you, by the way, for all the comments about my personal situation. Hopefully tomorrow afternoon we will get it resolved one way or the other, and hopefully the great way. Until the next time, stay well and stay tuned.